Welcome to the Droids Outpost, the semi-weekly podcast where the droid heads talk about things that are not Star Wars related. This week, it's E3. I'm Ryan, and I'm here with Chris and Sam. Boys, how are we doing?
Hey.
I'm lost. I feel like I'm looking for something to tie this into Star Wars already.
Oh, no. We're one droid short of a full Sabacc deck. We're getting by. Now, remember, we have our mainline episodes, which come out on Fridays. This is the Outpost. We're off the grid. We're talking about whatever we want. And like I said, today it's E3. And we're stoked about it.
And
it's Gamer Christmas.
There you go. I was going to say for our fans and guests who are on the feed, chances are they know what it is. But if they don't, what does E3 stand for?
The Electronic... I don't know.
What Entertainment is Expo.
Entertainment
Electronic
Expo?
Electronic yeah, exactly. Entertainment yeah, it's, Expo. It's basically like the big video
it's
game.
It's Comic-Con for video games.
Right, it's the video game trade show of the year. It's when they unveil all the new, the latest and greatest for all
it
the
has
video
become,
games.
It has become, it used to start, it used to be only open to the press. It was a trade show. It has become what one could only describe as unwieldy and humongous. The press conferences are comically overproduced mm-hmm. and... I love when E3 rolls around. I love a good reveal.
Yeah. That's what it is, right? It is just a series of reveals, and who doesn't like that feeling?
Yeah, it's very exciting, and, you know, the audience is very vocal, and that could be a asset or a detriment, depending.
Well, I actually had an interesting experience. I think this year, and maybe last year, there is something going on where it's like, I think the actual like conference itself, the actual presentations, I think have been a little bit less exciting to me, mm-hmm. The last couple of years. But like the time in general, the fact that it's like it's E3 week is still a big deal, and I still get super excited. And I think it's Chris's fault because for 6 years that I lived with him, we would stream it in the apartment, oh, yeah. and we would like make a deal of like we're ordering dinner, like getting takeout, yeah, we're like sitting down. Event. We had several roommates over that time, none of whom, other than us, ever liked video games at all.
An iota of interest. And so, if you don't have an iota of interest for this, don't worry, we'll be back with a full Star Wars pod.
Where, if you're not interested in video games, unfortunately, we will be talking about Jedi Fallen Order on the mainline pod, since that's Star Wars related. EA revealed gameplay for the first time, and we'll have some things to say about that on Friday.
And if you don't understand how this whole thing's going to work out, just wait for our mailer, and it'll have very specific instructions how to listen to the podcast.
We do have all of your addresses.
A quick note to tie in. Chris, we're having a poster giveaway. Do you want to set the parameters for the fans?
This is true. Yes. So if you were listening to the pod last episode of The Droids You're Looking For, we mentioned that we're having a special poster contest in honor of the first episode of The Outpost here tonight. And here's how it's going to work. Through this episode, when we get to the topic, we're going to say the secret word. Ooh. Do you have any guesses what the secret word might be?
Well, the two of us have a very
specific...
I mean,
specific,
we know. We have one guess, and it's the
My
right guess.
My guess would border on giving it away.
Anyhow, listen to the pod. Listen for the secret word. And here's what you get to do. Get the secret word. Put it in an email. Email droidspod@gmail.com. With the
subject
secret
line
word,
poster giveaway.
Subject line poster giveaway. You can put the secret word in the subject. Doesn't matter. If you're emailing us, it's got to be for the contest. No one else is emailing us. But what you could do is enter yourself into a raffle for this awesome set of four posters by Marco Menev, I believe is his name. They are framed, and they are scenes from the original Star Wars trilogy. So we're kicking this off strong with a set of four posters. They're beautiful. We'll put a link in the description here. And so listen through past this time, and then you'll hear the secret word.
Yes, the secret word will be revealed at some point in the podcast, and for retention reasons, probably closer to the end. So stick around. So, E3, we're going to be talking about most of the big conferences. Just a note, we're recording this Monday night right after the Square Enix conference. The Nintendo conference is happening tomorrow. The Nintendo Direct, they don't have a conference anymore, is happening tomorrow, so we will be not covering that. Big hopes that it's Metroid Prime 4 announcements, but I have a feeling they'll probably be talking about Fire Emblem and Pokemon Sword and Shield, which is great too. A big note I noticed is that there was, first, the presence of Google Stadia was really prominent this time around. Almost every game that was revealed at the end, they made a note of saying it would be released on Google Stadia. Mm-hmm. And with that, an emphasis on cloud gaming pretty much all around.
Yeah.
Xbox, we'll get into this a little later, but Xbox revealed their new console, which is coming out holiday 2020, I believe they said. Mm-hmm. And that had an emphasis on cloud gaming. Almost every publisher who had their own conference either revealed or already has a subscription cloud service. So, you know, when this may have been hyperbolic, but when the Stadia was revealed a few months ago, I sent a text that was like, Google just revealed a console killer. And mm-hmm. we'll see how that goes. The price is a little more inhibitive than I thought it would be, considering that their mission statement for this seemed to be like, no console, any game.
Right.
Yeah, it seems like, so we'll see, by the end of a year, you'll have purchased like a good chunk of a console. Like,
yeah.
So, I mean, I think that's, it's kind of par for the course for technology, is they've always been trying to drive towards something like this. I think mm-hmm. maybe the graphical fidelity is getting to the point where it can be streamed and you won't even notice if you're playing it natively or not. So, I mean,
yeah,
I think it's the inevitable future, unless there's some kind of hardware breakthrough where things can just be built in TV. But imagine getting a new TV and then just having the Stadia app built right into the TV. Like, that's pretty nice.
It obviously, it depends on bandwidth. It depends on if in ISPs, if they get involved and start throttling people's service and stuff like that. The big takeaway from it and the big advantage to it is that essentially, because you're using the processing power of like Stadia's servers, everyone basically has the most powerful gaming PC
mm-hmm.
that they could have.
Right.
And like, that's an exciting prospect, but also if you don't have the bandwidth, it's like you're not getting the full benefit of it.
Also, do you feel like that kind of kills the hobby of like PC gaming though?
As like, a PC gamer who is invested in a gaming PC, yeah.
Yeah, right? Like it definitely yeah. like, so maybe it's like this kind of middle ground. Like, I would say that like PlayStation graphics, moreover, until maybe a few years ago, like those were basically PC games on the fullest settings. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, sure. And there will always be the thing, you know, people, yeah. really hardcore gamers will be talking about latency times. You yeah. know, like, there's always going to be some advantage, you know, to having it in your home.
Yeah.
But we'll see. We'll see where this goes. You know, obviously, developers have bought in. If they're releasing it on Google Stadia, I think they're making it easy for them because I'm sure that the architecture is pretty similar. So it's not hard to like port over. It's not like putting it on, say, a Nintendo Switch.
I heard how it works is Google's hired millions of people, and then when you log on, the people have been trained to see your button commands, and they are just Twitch streaming the game back to you. So they see the button.
So it's like what I used to do to my little cousin, where we'd hand her the controller and say what a good job she was doing.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, you know, then I wish those workers the best, and I hope that they're protected by union rights. Let's hop in.
Do you guys think that with the like emphasis on streaming gaming, that it will mean that like legacy games or the like what we used to sort of call like backwards compatibility will be just something that's like once you have a game, you'll kind of always be able to play it?
That's interesting.
I do think that.
Yeah.
That to me is like maybe the most exciting thing because I am someone who mm-hmm. like I think it's come up on the pie, but like Ryan, I'm not as active of a gamer as you, mm-hmm. but I do still love playing video games. It just usually it's like it takes me a long time to get to them. I'll like buy them full price or I'll wait till they're on a deal and I'll buy them and then it'll take me months till I get around to playing something. And what has happened a couple of times, like particularly with the like the generation switch between PS3 and PS4, like I had like three or four PS3 games that I'd bought and just never played because I upgraded and then I never like hooked up the old console again.
Sure.
Right.
So backwards compatibility was something I used to always look for in systems. It's kind of why I became a Sony person early on because mm-hmm. they used to include it. So the idea for me of something like a Stadia or you know, whatever, you know, all the consoles answer to it. But the idea of being like, I bought, Superman 1, the game, and I can play it now or 10 years from now is really exciting.
Yeah, and that's kind of a benefit right now of like PC gaming, which is still true. Like I can still, or anyone can still download like the original Doom and play it. So so that is like an interesting thing that you brought up. And also in their presentation of the Scarlet is what they're calling their next console, Microsoft like made a note of saying that it's going to be backwards compatibility like for generations. And my Xbox has been big about that. Sony's kind of dropped the ball on that this generation.
I think given like the hardware that they've all chosen to go forward with, like I think that'll just be the case moving forward because they've all kind of picked like a PC architecture to run with. And so I think going forward for like any console, backwards compatibility will just be like a shot in the pan, because before you were taking like graphical leaps and having to like design your own special processor, and they weren't they were doing that for a few reasons, and one was for like exclusives and copy protection. So they wanted, like, PlayStation 2 wanted to sync developers into their development track and not allow like an Xbox or something else, so they would really making a game for your console very resource heavy, and like Nintendo notoriously has cartridges and things like that. So that was kind of the old way of making game consoles and making money off of games. And now I think with this new architecture, it's all about services, because the companies like EA and those things have gotten so much money, they can make games for all three, no problems. Now I think it's really just the services that each console is going to offer.
Yeah, and you were talking about the architecture of these things. It's like there's no longer, aside from the Nintendo Switch, which has a completely different power set, there's really no huge disparity between PlayStation and Xbox games the way there used to be. You know, you could have like a really bad port of an Xbox game on a PS2.
Right.
Generally doesn't happen anymore. And like you said, it's because like, we're getting really Moneyball about this, but I think AMD makes the processors for both of them now.
Right. Yeah.
Or they make the graphics card.
It switches between both AMD and NVIDIA all the time. Even developing for Switch now is just pretty PC standard as well. So it's
sure, because I mean, if you're developing for PC, you have to be developing for NVIDIA and AMD cards anyway.
Right. So I think it's pretty funny that they're all kind of leveling out to this end point. So I think really the streaming thing is just a taste of the future. It's going to be, what service do you buy into? And I think that's where like things like crossplay and all that good stuff is really going to actually make the difference.
And I think that this coming console generation may be when we finally get that, because I think everybody sees that the writing's on the wall.
Yep.
So let's jump in. The first big conference of the show was the EA Play on Saturday. And the big thing that they were showing was Jedi Fallen Order. Like I said, we're going to get into that in detail.
No, Star Wars.
Going to get into that in detail in the mainline episode this coming Friday. Quickly, a lot of people were a little lukewarm on it. I'm one of them.
I would say I'm less than lukewarm.
I'd say I'm
cooler.
I'd say I'm Skywalker warm.
You're Skywalker warm. Although they did make an announcement at the Microsoft conference that they're doing the Skywalker Saga Lego games, which that is actually the more exciting Star Wars.
That was a lot of fun. Yeah.
To me.
Yeah, that sounds great. Also, I just could not get over the absolute just scream fest that was the whole EA presentation.
Oh my god! I don't want to go after Greg Miller, but geez, Louise.
I was like, I miss the days when like it was like Reggie and Steve Ballmer, because they seem so calm.
listen. I mean,
Steve Ballmer seems calm.
People have to take. People really have to like, choose a door when it comes to E3. You know, in terms of the vibe of their conference. I mean, it's becoming like the number one collective for middle-aged men in bomber jackets. But if you're not doing that, you're a dude in a Hawaiian shirt just screaming. And I know that Greg Miller wasn't wearing a Hawaiian shirt, but he really had the vibe of someone who was.
Deep down, he was. I agree.
Inside, he was wearing a Hawaiian shirt.
That is an amazing observation of E3. It's like they go through all the effort to produce like some very impressive stage spectacles of like what you're seeing, and then it's always middled out by like, with unparalleled experience and new gameplay. Like, it's...
Well, it's always middled out, and, like, I actually find this to be an endearing thing, is that when they don't hire hosts, like Greg Miller or whoever, I'm not using him, but, you know, like, there are people who are more my vibe. You know, I like Kevin Pereira. He does that a lot.
Yeah.
Like, then they, like, shove out some, like, you know, like, a graphic dev who was like, I never wanted to be in front of people.
Right.
To describe, like, why the new engine works so well. And, like, people are interested in that, but there's such a dichotomy between that and, like, the Axe body spray presentation of the Xbox conference.
I think in our group chat, it either, like, leans towards, like, XFL-type vibes or, like, so indie darling that you can't stand it. Like,
you know what?
It's Little Miss Sunshine or Terry Crews.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like, what are the, like, they don't find that middle ground quite yet.
And I do have to say, I realized I just use Axe body spray kind of as, like, the like, trope of, like, that joke. But Axe body spray this week stood up for gay rights on Twitter, and I think that's cool.
Hey, there you go.
Anyway. So, Jedi Fallen Order was the big EA thing. Just of note, BioWare is owned by EA. There was no mention of Anthem.
Oh, wow.
Which is...
It was shocking.
Well, like, I don't know if you guys have been following, like, the bumpy launch of Anthem and the kind of, like, slow and unfortunate downfall of BioWare, it seems, which is, like, really sucks. I hope they get a win because I really like their games. Anthem launched and was kind of like a mess, and people were really upset about it, and they've just gone completely quiet on it since. They've, like, delayed updates and things like that, and this was kind of a litmus test for people to see if they were going to mention it, and they didn't at all. And this is, like, a huge AAA title.
Yeah.
It reminds me of whenever they released, I think it was Arkham Knight. When Rocksteady released Arkham Knight, it was like originally it was supposed to be, you know, PS4, Xbox 360, or Xbox One, excuse me, like PS4, Xbox One, and PC all on the same day. And like the PC got delayed and
they pulled it from stores. It was so broken.
Then it was so poorly executed and so broken. And they promised updates for like months and months. And then they just sent an update that was like, or they sent an announcement that was like, we can't fix this. And so it's like done, and it was dead. And it just like, I don't know, wild. That's like shocking that can even happen.
I feel like the stakes, we're kind of used to like movie making production stakes where it's like, okay, you can reshoot something, right? You can have, it's expensive, but it can happen. I think with video games, like the production track is so complex that it's like, sometimes you're like, this is a day one problem, and we've sat on it for 6 years and, like, couldn't figure it out. We spent $100 million. Like, you can't go back once these things are released.
There's also, I mean, okay, so this isn't, you know, there are fair consumer complaints about things like this. There's, like, a very direct relationship between publishers and consumers in the gaming community. That on top of the fact that the gaming community, this is not a secret, can be like extremely toxic. So like that's an issue, you know, like I love video games, but I also like acknowledge the living in this dichotomy of like not want to contribute to such a toxic community, but also like loving the product. So that's like a different thing. But with things like this, people like will if a publisher or developer loses their consumer's trust, there's like they're in a really sticky situation, which is where BioWare is right now, because there was talk of them making Anthem free to play. Like whether those were substantiated rumors or not, no one really knows, but that would be a viable idea since it was kind of they would kind of buy themselves some time. However, then you're spitting in the face of everybody who paid full price to play it. So it's like they can't really do that unless they're going to issue refunds, which they never are. So it's like at this point,
it has happened. Like The Sims 4, SimCity, the latest one, that had a batched launch and everyone got a refund.
Really? I mean, like, sometimes... So, what was the other thing? Oh, No Man's Sky, like, in the last few years, that they were issuing refunds because people were so disappointed with it.
Right.
I don't know. It's really interesting whether it seems like they're probably just going to let it die, which is unfortunate because there is like a core. I've played like probably 15 hours of the game, and there is like a core gameplay loop that is satisfying to it. It just, they clearly like were not done with it. They clearly needed to get it out the door.
Right.
You know, they needed another year on it, and they just were not given that, or they, you know, they didn't have the money. There's like all these constraints, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think the biggest tell, though, is, yeah, keeping it out of E3, and that's, like, that's the main stage. You're not seeing it. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. And then FIFA Volta. I'm not a FIFA player. Either you guys a FIFA player?
Yeah, a little bit. It's their new play mode. I guess it's more like street soccer, street football. It's pretty big for FIFA because it's a game that's pretty locked into its gameplay mode. You have Ultimate Team, which is, like, build your own team. It's a little bit of a money grab because it's like you're buying cards, you're earning points, that kind of thing. You really grind it out on that. And to introduce a new game element that I think may be influenced by Volta is pretty crazy.
Let me note my shock at EA doing a money grab.
Yeah, I mean, I am surprised. If you look up the numbers of a game like FIFA or I think FIFA and NBA 2K are like the two biggest ones that have like these ultimate team modes that are just like FIFA makes like $2 billion a year just on the one game mode. That's on top of sales of the game. It's like millions of active players at any given moment. It's insane, the numbers.
I just got to say, I think it's hysterical that we are still feeling the ripples of the microtransactions debacle from from Battlefront 2.
Sure.
Like, every developer mentioned at some point in their conference, like, no microtransactions.
Yep.
No loot boxes. It's like, and it's being investigated by, like, state courts. It's, like, crazy. This is, like, EA's legacy at this point. Yeah. They've killed BioWare.
It's just ripping people off.
Destroyed microtransactions for other devs who were like, be cool, man.
Yeah, exactly. Well, all those iPhone games, they'll live on forever. It doesn't matter.
So the next big conference was the Microsoft conference. Sony had no presence this year because for one reason or another, they felt like they had shown everything they had to show. I don't think there was anything really new. They just have a lot of games in development. Maybe they didn't want to face the Days Gone audience. I don't know.
My guess is a PS5 later in the year. And they also...
Yeah, they've also started doing their own conference. Yeah. Their own, like...
They've been pretty good about collecting information and then using that as their marketing. Like, this way, if they have 5 months, they could see what EA's doing, what's Microsoft's doing, what their competition's doing. And then
they're also good at collecting information and then getting hacked.
Yeah, they're very good at that. But it could be a tactical move.
Yeah, someone hacked it and it just had a lot of the word Xbox Scarlet with thumbs down emojis. So some surprising, there were some standard announcements here. Halo Infinite is launching with the Xbox Scarlet. They announced a new console, which is like crazy because usually that's so huge.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it was just like a thing they said at the end.
Well, they've been like,
I didn't know about it until we started this conference. I like Googled in the background. I was like, wait, yeah. Really? Yeah, I didn't even blip on my radar.
I think it's when you release so many like incremental upgrade consoles and like variations, mm-hmm. It like gets a little lost in the mix.
Yeah, sure. It's true. The biggest surprise here was that they're bringing Phantasy Star Online 2 like westward.
Finally. Yeah.
With Microsoft is the surprising thing. Mm-hmm. Just because as I understand it, the Xbox in Japan specifically doesn't have like a big fan base. You know, it's like it's mostly like Sony and Nintendo. So for Microsoft to be the ones to bring that game here, we'll see. I mean, like, I'm excited to play it. I love JRPGs, which I believe Phantasy Star Online is one. And yeah,
it's a fun game. Yeah, I've heard from people that have played some of the translated versions online that it's like it's great.
Yeah, so I'm excited about that. I'm hoping it'll be on PC. I don't have an Xbox. So that was cool to see. It was surprising that Microsoft is going to be the one to do it. Yeah. The other huge news. Excuse me, need water. The other big news is that Cyberpunk 2077 got a release date, which is April 26, 2020. a little far off for anybody unfamiliar. This is made by CD Projekt Red, which are also the developers that made the Witcher series. And Witcher 3 is kind of one of those, like, it's the high watermark now for kind of like RPGs, action RPGs, and rightfully so. It's pretty amazing. So this is another kind of giant open world. This is in first person, but it's, you know, a lot of character building, a lot of freedom of choice, a lot of like branching storylines, that kind of thing. And people were skeptical whether it would be this generation or not. So this all but confirms, you know, it could obviously still be delayed, but this all but confirms that it will be this generation, and that's cool.
Yeah.
And it looks amazing.
That's not even the big news. You said it was the big news. The other big news was that it gets a release date. The other big news is it's starring Keanu Reeves.
Guys, Keanu Reeves is entering the next chapter of his career, and I am so here for it. And it seems like everyone else is as well.
We're in the
Reevesassance.
The man is a delight. He's present. Mm-hmm. He's happy to be there.
Yep.
His year is like enormous already. Yeah. It's like he's crushing 2019. In 2020, he's got Bill and Ted coming back.
I feel like for a little while now, Keanu's been on like cruise levels of fandom for me, but like
he just seems like he's the guy you want to meet.
He's more approachable, yeah.
You know? Like,
yeah, he had Cruise a very...
Cruise is crazy in the most impressive way, and, like, Keanu Reeves is, like, human in the most impressive way.
It's true. Wow. It's true. And it's, like, one of those things, it's, like, right after Rogue Nation came out, it's, like, Tom Cruise, it felt like the world, like, really got with him, you know, for one reason or another. Don't know why. It just had that certain je ne sais quoi, and I feel like that's what's happening with Keanu Reeves right now. Like, the world is just really on his wavelength.
Oh, for sure.
And that's awesome.
Cyberpunk is.
That's true. He is a character in it that's becoming a trend, you know, after, like, Death Stranding. Yeah. We have Norman Reedus and Mads Mikkelsen and Leah Seydoux.
It is funny.
And we have John Bernthal all over Ghost Recon. So
the first game I can think of doing that, to my mind, was L.A. Noire.
Oh, right.
Name one before that.
Wow. Okay.
Onimusha 3 featured Jean yes. Renoir.
Jean Renoir, yeah.
Yeah.
Jean Renoir. It was very strange. I played it, and I was very confused. I was like, is that supposed to be Jean Renoir? I'm sure I didn't know his name at the time, but...
The guy from...
Oh, I did. I was big.
Is that the man from Leon the Professional?
Big Ronin fan, too.
And Ronin?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
The second mention of the film Ronin on the podcast.
Exactly.
Yeah, so then also Gears 5, Gears of War 5 coming out. I'm sure it'll be just like Gears of War 1 through 4. Psychonauts 2, which looks very charming. I haven't played the first one, but I plan to now.
I've only heard great things.
Yeah.
I picked it up on PS4 a little while ago, and I'm really looking forward to it. I wish they would release it on Switch. I want so many more of these games to port over to Switch, just because I'm in a phase where it's like that's my preferred method of play.
Yeah.
The portability is just so good. I mean, I still love my PlayStation 4, but like, get some more games on Switch. I'm so
looking
forward
to... Well, the number one
way
to make sure that a game will come out on Switch is to have me buy it on PS4.
Yeah, that's frustrating. I hate when everybody gets excited that it's released on a new system, and you're like, well, I already have it.
Yeah. Talking to you, yeah. Dragon Quest 11. Anyway.
All your friends who want to stream it are on a different system, so you got to rebuy it.
Yeah. You're just double dipping, swearing that you're doing what you swore you would never do.
Right.
Stupid, Ryan. Stupid. Anyway. To me, the most exciting announcement here was the Elden Ring game from Software. This is apparently an open world action RPG developed by Hidetaka Miyazaki, who did the Dark Souls games, Bloodborne and Sekiro, all of which I adore. And apparently it was in collaboration with George R. R. Martin, who did Game of Thrones, which I do not adore. But that's still an exciting collaboration. I can get behind some world building.
Now, Ryan, are you sitting down?
Yeah.
Because Sam has read all of the Elder Ring books.
Are you aware that I've read the 7-part Elden Ring series? I haven't watched a single trailer for the game, but
have either of you guys played any of the Souls games, or should I say attempted any of the Souls games?
I've attempted one of them. I forget which one.
I think it was Bloodborne.
I attempted Bloodborne, yeah.
You tried Bloodborne, Chris. I remember that. I'm tempted by... They also did Sekiro, right?
Yes.
I'm tempted by Sekiro because I know it's a very similar gameplay and like challenge level, which is something that's daunted me from trying the others, but it's like it's set in the world that I feel like I'd have fun playing in, so I don't know. I haven't. It's still pretty expensive. It's still basically full price. They discounted a little bit right now, but like, I can't bite on that one yet.
They make games that are definitively challenging, but also create these like very singular experiences. I've never really played anything else like them. But they are. It took me a year to get to a save point in Bloodborne. Every time I played, I just needed to start over because I just couldn't get there. And then it clicked. And then I, like, loved the games. But they are, like, they're not everyone's taste. And, if like, sometimes it really, you have to wrestle it. So that was the big Microsoft stuff. Later that night was Bethesda. Everybody was hoping for an Elder Scrolls announcement. And they got one. It's that Elder Scrolls Blades is on mobile. Which was a thing that they already knew. What I loved about the Bethesda conference, one... great bomber jackets all around. Todd Howard had a really nice tan suede bomber jacket. Sorry to like step on your toes here a little bit, Sam. Todd Howard is the head of Bethesda, and he's really good on stage. He's like cool as a cucumber. He knows how to communicate to the audience. It's like, it's very entertaining to watch. Bethesda had also a little bit of a disastrous launch this year with Fallout 76. And they took a different approach. They approached it head on, and they opened with like this like strange, almost guilting video where they were like, "You've always stuck with us no matter what, all the time. You love us even despite our flaws. Thank you so much." And then they came out being like, "Thanks for sticking with Fallout 76. Yeah, we know that we kind of messed up, but thank you. And you guys kept on playing." And it's like this like very like, you're almost telling someone they stuck by you before they've done it.
Yeah,
right.
You know, like, hey babe, thanks so much for sticking by me through this tough time that's about to happen.
It's like they're planting the seed of like, oh, I guess I do like that game.
Yeah, but they announced also they're doing a little bit of course correction, and they announced a lot of new updates to that game. I played it a little bit at launch, and it was much like Anthem, a little empty. So I'm excited to jump back in and
see.
This
jacket is great. By the way, you're spot on. It's beautiful. I'm trying to tell. Yeah, it's like a bomber kind of moto jacket.
Yeah,
it looks so
good.
It's
very sweet. Oh man, the conference was full of them. This will be the year of the bomber jackets. I generally like Bethesda's like the RPG games. I literally started playing Skyrim for the first time 2 weeks ago. So I'm 10 years late on that. And oh boy, what a game, everybody.
Can't do it. Tried it.
Have you heard of the Skyrim?
I tried it. I tried real hard.
That's kind of what surprised
me. Let
me
guess. You didn't like crafting daggers.
That's what surprised me about Bethesda is that I didn't realize it had such like a cult of personality. But then you think about the games like Skyrim and the series, like those were cultural touchstones. Like
they're also like what people refer to. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I was just gonna say like Conan did like a game. What's his gamer?
Clueless Gamer
on one of those. Like, it hit the mainstream enough. And so I guess they do have quite a fan. And Fallout is huge also, so.
Well, they make what you could refer to as forever games. Mm-hmm. You know, like, people just play them literally for the rest of their lives. Yep. Not exclusively, but also, like, they're really supportive of the mod community. So, like, the version of Skyrim I'm playing, even though it's, like, the updated special edition or whatever.
Yeah.
It's like not the version that was released, you know, because it's like there are new textures on it. People have made like new weather thing. It's crazy.
You put Thomas the Tank Engine in there.
Yes, exactly. I'm playing as Angel from the show Angel. things like that. All of my narration is done by Baba Booey.
that's a special Baba Booey mod.
I got the Baba Booey mod. So that, you know, hopefully they make nice on this. All of the updates have been free so far, so that, like, you know, that buys you a lot of goodwill with people. And then they announced basically that they won't be announcing anything about the Elder Scrolls 6 or their other game, which I believe is Starfield. Giant RPGs they're making that they announced will be next generation.
And is that like a probably an Elder Scrolls but in space, is my guess.
I think it's that their kind of open world RPG but in space.
And
which
we can have a space one, and we can have a sports comic and a space comic.
That's exactly
like all my big fans out there.
And then they spent a majority of the conference talking about Doom Infinite, which looks like a Doom game. Like, it looks like it kicks ass, and it's bloody and disgusting and, like, kind of awesome and loud.
I think what impressed me, though, was the additional of how, again, going back to streaming, is how they plan to transport Doom Infinite with their Orion streaming service.
Oh, yeah.
Which was pretty crazy.
Yeah, they had a bit of tech. And then they had that weird moment where, like, that woman came out on stage playing it on her phone.
Yeah. I tried.
And, man, she was kicking... Did you see how fast she was moving?
She was moving through that game. That immediately made me want to sign up. I was like, this game is this intense.
I could look like that on the subway.
I have a little controller for my iPhone, so I was like geared up, and they're like, and you can get it now. And I ran and tried to get it, but all it did was took me through a loop of signing up. So I'm signed up.
But you can't play it yet.
I can't play it.
Even though you have a tiny little controller for your
I did read in the New York Post, though, about a man who broke the sound barrier using his fingers to play Doom. That wasn't you?
That was me. Did you hear the booms?
Yeah, I did. I was concerned. So, Doom Infinite, I mean, I think it comes out in September, and it looks... I mean, those games are fun as hell. No pun intended. They are, like... They're bloody and gross. It plugs into everything that, like... When you're 13, your like parents would not want you to play.
I remember
Doom 2 was the first game I ever had on computer.
You feel like that's being like, I'm playing bloody video games. You better come out and pound me, like that kind of thing.
There was 1 year. Hey, there it is. There was 1 year where I was terrified of the original Doom. Like I was of that age, and then there was like. I feel like it was like months went by and I was like, I need to play this for every IDDDQDD. That's the infinite life code. Like IDJFK. Those are all stuck in my head now because I've played this game so many times.
Well, you should try that when Doom Infinite comes out. See if that code still works.
See if it still works. Yeah.
They also showed a little bit more gameplay from Wolfenstein Youngblood, and like that series is awesome. I don't know if you guys... I played New Colossus all the way through, and I loved it. So, it looks cool.
Yeah.
I like, the shooting Nazis is fun in that game. Like, it is a complete power fantasy. It's very cathartic. You just shoot Nazis in it. It's great. Right.
They also made a point to say that on stage. Like 1,000 times. I think that's probably
what, like, that you get to shoot Nazis in the game?
And I think it's probably their way of, like, kind of justifying the imagery they use. Also,
sure, yeah, which, because it is, some of the imagery they use, like, around, like, Nazi occupied areas is, like, audacious, bordering on potentially offensive.
Yeah, so like I feel like when they're on stage they just say like, well, you're the good guys and you're killing the bad Nazis. Like, they make sure you say it every opportunity.
And that is like, the game isn't really saying anything much beyond that, which is just like, these guys suck, like, get rid of them. You know, and it's like, I remember when New Colossus was coming out, Vice did a thing where they went to the developers and they were like, you know, a lot of white supremacists are upset about this. And like, they had the appropriate response where they were like, who cares? Screw those people.
Well, that's the thing. I think it's like a good way to reach a lot of people to say like, hey, these are why the fascists are bad. Like, I'm not advocating its use, but I'm saying if the video game is a healthy way to get out that anger, to be like, hey, these fascists are evil, that, like, then maybe it is a good tool.
Yeah. It helps.
It's I'm like, always, what are I'm you always gonna, fine what are you... with people saying fascists and or Nazis are bad and killable.
Yeah, it's like, what are they going to say? Like, like, you don't want us to get rid of the Nazis.
Exactly.
So those games rock. They're really, really cathartic and fun and stuff. Quickly, PC Gaming Show was today. They had a lot of like cool indie stuff that we'll kind of move through. The biggest thing was that they showed, they were pimping that they were going to show Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines 2 gameplay.
Yeah.
And they showed, what'd you say?
Long title.
Yeah, it's a little clunky.
Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines 2.
Yeah, it's a little clunky, but it's a very anticipated RPG. The gameplay they showed, I'd say cumulatively, was about 7 seconds. So wonderful. The next huge conference was Ubisoft. That was this afternoon. I gotta say, to me, this was the conference of the show. They knew what they were doing. They were playing to their audience. They made a good amount of new, reveals for games, and then also just talking about how they're expanding their existing games. They had Rob McElhenney from Always Sunny in Philadelphia reveal that they've been working with Ubisoft to make an Apple series.
Oh, that's fun.
About a development studio that makes the biggest MMO in the world. It looks very funny.
Oh, that's great.
I mean, yeah. It's like that sounds great.
Yeah. Yeah. So, just of note, Watch Dogs Legion, that was the big reveal for this one. It's the third in the Watch Dogs series. I haven't played the first one, but I love the second one. It's kind of like a third-person action RPG with, like, hackers. So there's, like, right. A lot of elements like that.
The first one was supposed to be a pretty big letdown, wasn't it? I remember the build-up for the first one, and then I remember, like, I just thought, like, yeah, I didn't stick with the series. I'm kind of shocked it had a third, so the second must have been good.
Yeah, the second was great, and the first one was kind of early in the console cycle, so I think it was kind of straddling the line.
Yeah.
And I think they were figuring it out. But the second one was great, and this one looked really fun. The big draw of it is that you can potentially play as anyone in the game. So instead of having a main character, you recruit people to like your hacker group, and you can recruit literally any NPC, and they'll each have their own story.
Oh, that's fun.
So when you die, it's like a permadeath situation, and you just move on to the next recruit.
Oh, that's neat.
Oh, that's cool.
But it's like literally any NPC in the game is potentially a playable character, and that's really impressive.
That is.
I've never seen that done before.
No.
So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, that's very cool.
So the other things that were big, they showed a little bit more of Ghost Recon Breakpoint, which they had revealed about a month ago. A new Rainbow Six game called Quarantine. Rainbow Six Siege is huge. I can't play it. Like, I just can't. Like, I just die immediately. But it is, like, a huge game for people. Ubisoft is... They crank out games, man. Like, that's the thing, is that, like, Ubisoft is seen as, like, they just make, like, kind of, like, generic games that they pump out. I think they make really high-quality stuff. Mm-hmm. And, like, some of it hits and misses, you know? And I think that certainly a lot of it has, like, problematic politics. But I also don't think that they're necessarily trying to make political statements. Which I understand is also, like, a cop-out.
Sure.
But, you know, it's like games aren't quite there yet, and I'm not trying to like make an excuse for it. So it exists in that dichotomy, especially with a lot of Ubisoft games, especially since they make a lot of these like military games.
Yeah.
That they're trying to make it be like you're on an island when there's this like evil regime, but it's like super simplified.
Right. Yeah. And it's also it's interesting, too, because they also have like the Tom Clancy deal. So it's like those political thrillers. I think they're just kind of grabbing the entertainment parts of all those ideas.
Yeah, and they're trying to like put a like geopolitical spin on it, but not in any serious way. So it comes out a little clunky.
I think I've like fallen a little bit off. I was real into Ubisoft I was really big a couple generations ago on the Splinter Cell games.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then I really liked at the beginning, I played the first I guess it was about the first four Assassin's Creed games, which was like the first one and then the trilogy for Ezio.
Yeah.
But like, I bought one or two other Assassin's Creed games, but what they kind of did with those, like, first of all, they killed off the Splinter Cell franchise, which like bummed me out because I thought it was pretty cool. And then what they did with Assassin's Creed just like devalued it so far for me.
Well, they made one a year for like,
yeah.
That was wild. That was like, Yeah.
And looking at this list of games, I'm like, oh, it's like, oh, we're on our third Watch Dogs. Oh, the Ghost Recon, another one. Like, there's just so many of these games that it's a little difficult for me to get excited about. And it's a shame because I did like that publisher or developer. What are they? They're a developer, right?
They're both.
They're both.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Because they have a bunch of mini develop, you know, they have like Ubisoft Montreal and like things like that.
Montreal.
Well, I think it is interesting as hardware kind of starts to level out that these companies are starting to act like they're on the same playing field as Microsoft and Sony and Nintendo. You know, like they're having these huge conferences because they can produce content for everything the same way like Microsoft Studios. Obviously, they favor the Xbox, but they also have like the opportunity to make PC games and other things like that. So it's like it is kind of neat to see this changing landscape with all these companies press shows.
Yeah, it's. I think that Ubisoft is actually. I think they became aware of their kind of cookie cutter the aspect of them and have adjusted a little bit. Like for Assassin's Creed, they took a few years off and then they came out with Assassin's Creed Origins, which was a much different game. I played it and I played a little bit of Odyssey as well, and I like them a lot. They introduced a little bit of RPG elements, but like light RPG elements, the way that like the that new God of War had like quote unquote RPG elements. And they really like tightened them up. They're cool. They're cool games, and I never played like the earlier ones, but as I understand it, they're very different. So I think that that's a smart move.
That trilogy, the Ezio trilogy, the trilogy that was based around Assassin's Creed 2 really was great. And I feel like it had some of that light RPG stuff of like character upgrading and everything. But I don't want to, I'm taking us way off topic, but
I'm
glad to hear it. Like Origin sounds interesting to me. Hey, yeah, we're just riven here. We're just riven.
And Rainbow Six Quarantine, it's a co-op game. That's kind of what Rainbow Six has become, these kind of like close quarter tactical things. They announced that the Assassin's Creed developers, creators made a new game called Gods and Monsters. They showed like a very small cutscene thing, like trailer. It has a cool aesthetic. It looks a little bit like cel shady ish. So that's like a huge swing compared to the rest of their games. Chris, you had a really funny observation that everything's either like really cute or like super
everything's like incredibly adorable or the XFL, like it leans in the one of those directions. There's no middle grounds in games. They can either be like the most adorable cuddly creatures, they're like this is Fluffy, he gotta help him collect nub nubs, and then it's like or it's like
we're the wolves and these are the ghosts.
I'm a linebacker with mud on my face and I have to chainsaw zombies in half, like those are the two.
We gotta end the zombies thing. They announced huge additions to the Division 2. Speaking of games with potentially problematic politics, but man, that aside, I loved the Division 2 and the Division 1.
Oh, that's great.
If I've ever seen a satisfying gameplay loop, Louise.
I think that the Division is a good example of like the promise of this current console generation. Like I think it had all the elements of what good modern console games could be. So like when they first showed that demo for Division 1, I was like blown away about like possibilities. They like introduced, and some of these elements didn't make it in the game, but it was just like kind of the dynamic environment, how it was open world, it's online, things are continuously updating in the background, and like they even at one point showed you could like have your iPad and like play a part of the game with that while the other game was going, like
did that work? Did that ever happen?
I don't know if that ever came to fruition.
Yeah, I don't know if that second screen thing.
I remember that was in the trailer for the first one, and then I think that was kind of, that went the way of Arkham Knight PC.
They were trying to do that for some
games. We sunk some hours into that first Division game. Oh, the Division 2 I went solo on, but the Division 1 we played a lot. And
It was great.
That's a great example of a developer seeing that game was a little empty on launch, and by the time it was through, it was a completely, they had revamped everything and it kind of became the game it was meant to be. And then they launched the Division 2, which had learned all those lessons. That's kind of like what Watch Dogs 2 did as well. So, you know, it can be done if you have a satisfying gameplay loop. That was the big stuff for Ubisoft. A good thing to note, there was no mention of Beyond Good and Evil 2, which is this like huge sequel that seemingly has nothing to do with the first game, but people are very excited about it. They had shown, I think, you know, one of those like animated trailers 2 years ago, and since then it's been kind of like radio silence. It seemed like it had a very ambitious scope, so we'll see if that even makes this generation. We're getting close to the end of it. So we'll have to see. And then tonight was the Square Enix, and boy oh boy, what a conference this was.
I'll tell you what, this was my favorite because it transported me back to 1996, Chris. Like they their lineup actually like echoed
some of the games were literally from then.
Yeah,
well,
exactly.
It was, yeah, so many of them, they were re-releases.
Yeah,
it's like
so
all,
many, and they didn't even
re-release.
Like up-res them. There were some that it was like, oh, this is what it looks like on the Vita.
There was one. There was one that was like down-res. They made it look worse.
I have my in my note here. It has that Chris wants the Cars game that's in there.
I'd love that Cars game. I mean, I love those little, just like
I liked that
mini games. It looked kind of fun. It looked like you were just a little kart racer. And I
it was also one of my favorite like videos in the whole like segment, just because I was like, oh, this family seems nice. Like I like the people.
We take pieces of brightness where we can in this world.
Right. Well,
go ahead. Sorry.
I was just gonna say. Like that, a game like that reminds me of just like, it's like a Nintendo game you used to play. I think it was called Off Road, and it just like, basically, it's the same exact game. They just amp it up a little.
So they opened with a big one and closed with a big one on this one, with a little big ones in between. But they opened with the Final Fantasy VII remake,
yes,
which they had announced almost a decade. It 4 years ago. I can't remember when they showed the original. It's when they showed gameplay from Final Fantasy 15. Those were shown at the same time.
It's insane. And graphically, it's improved quite a bit.
Well, when you... the design of... here, and here it is. Our secret word for the poster giveaway. It is Cloud. When you see the design of Cloud...
Don't forget, you email the word Cloud to droidspod@gmail.com for a chance to win the 4-poster set of Star Wars posters from the original trilogy.
Again, that's Cloud. And if you write Cloud Strife, you're out. No last names. Anyway, the design of him,
your own strife.
The design of him and his Buster Sword looks pretty much like that original trailer we had seen where we just like did a tracking shot behind him.
Yeah.
But they showed gameplay this time, like with a breakdown. By the way, you mentioned this. That announcer was fantastic.
Yeah.
And the translator for the Japanese developer, amazing.
Yeah. I think that they, like, this is the conference for me that stole the show. Like, it delivered on this promise of this game. They've kept it secret for so long. And, like, to enhance the gameplay and to tell they were genuinely excited about, because this is, like, I mean, this is a darling baby for Square. Like, this is
like the biggest game I remember. Like, it was like this, and I remember, you know, it's like I remember Zelda, I remember like Ocarina of Time, I remember GoldenEye, and like I remember Final Fantasy VII.
Uphold it as, you know, the greatest game you could ever play, despite it now being nigh unplayable.
It's so blocky and hard
but
to
it was
at.
Such a game changer, no pun intended. But it was huge. No. It was the high watermark for RPGs for a long time, the way Chrono Cross had been for those whole 2 years before it.
Well, just also, I mean, just for storytelling as well. You mean Chrono Trigger?
Yes. What did I say? Chrono Cross.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, Chrono Trigger.
But it definitely had to be like they had to raise the bar on themselves, and it seemed like the gameplay. So the way I kind of took the gameplay was, in normal Final Fantasy games, it's a non-active battle. You stand there, you select your commands. Sometimes the enemy can hit you in between that time. And
if I could issue just a little bit of a correction,
yeah,
in traditional Final Fantasy games,
yes,
not recently.
So. Right. At that moment in time, a lot of people preferred that, though, because that's how Final Fantasy VI and all the ones prior to that were.
Yeah, turn-based. Turn-based.
Very battle. Turn-based, yeah. And so they did introduce the element of, like, the enemies can hit you while you're making commands, so it gives you a little bit of urgency. But I think in this game, they still have that element, but what they've done is just replaced it with the ability just to beat on these characters with you. Like, they've given you something to do while your load bar loads. Yes. And I think that's genius.
It's such a great idea. Because for people like Sam, who hate turn-based combat, it gives you a little
oh, no,
bit.
We lost him.
And, like, to be honest, I enjoy turn-based games a lot, mm-hmm. but it sometimes feels really archaic when you're sure. playing it. Sometimes it feels nostalgic, like Dragon yep. Quest XI, which is a straight-up turn-based RPG.
Right.
But sometimes it feels a little archaic, and to, like, kind of bring it up like this, mm-hmm. and if that it's implementing a block function and a real-time combat function that then builds up your ATB bar until yep. you can do tactical combat.
It's great.
And that then, they said it's, like, modifiable enough that you could either do that as turn-based or real-time, depending on how you set up shortcuts.
Right. I was just going to say, like, then they just made it a straight-up action RPG. Like, they...
Which is genius.
Yeah, they made two games in once. I think the only, like, part of it, and they've kind of solved it, I'd like to see it or play it, is switching characters, I think. Because that's a big part of that style of game.
Yeah.
So...
In the gameplay they showed, you can do it seamlessly.
It's perfect.
Which is also the case in Final Fantasy XV.
Yeah. I hope that they just... I hope that this isn't so ambitious that they make this first one and you're stuck in the... No, spoiler alert. You get out of that big, dirty city into this huge world. But it's like a third of the game, though. And so yeah. I hope they're not so ambitious that we're stuck in Midgar until... forever.
Well, rumor has it it's going to be an episodic release the way that Final Fantasy 13 was.
Gotcha.
So it's very possible that the first game is Midgar.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting. I mentioned this on our text chain, and I guess I'll issue a little bit of a spoiler alert here. This game is over 20 years old, and there's a conversation happening now that a lot of people who are going to play it haven't played it before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they're too young or they never went back. Or like I said, it's like this would be unplayable to a kid now.
Right.
Like, there's a huge death at the end of the first disc.
Yeah.
Because this used to come on. This came on three discs.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
There's a huge death at the end of the first disc that shook the world in 1996. And we're still feeling the tremors from it. And people are saying that you can't talk about it anymore. Openly, because it's a spoiler.
That's pretty funny.
Which is really funny.
Yeah. Is this the first instance of the unspoil respoil?
I've never heard of a respoil. Or yeah.
There anyway. You have it. We have coined the phrase here first on the Outpost.
You just take the ER. You take the ER off the end. You put it in the beginning, and you get
it's a respoil. That's a
this game also switched directors like halfway through development, and apparently they started from scratch.
It seems like a common theme.
The new director they had was Nomura, who did Kingdom Hearts 3, a game that I adore, and Sam would hate. Like, it would be like putting needles in Sam's eyes. I can't even describe how much Sam would hate this game, but it captured me with my full heart, lore and all. I had no idea what was going on.
I like that in that scenario that the game is putting needles in Sam's eyes.
Yeah. With the power of friendship, Riku, Roxas, Mickey, Goofy, and Sora are all putting needles, key needles, in Sam's eyes.
Oh, God.
I actively feel my heart sugar dropping out there, right now.
I had no idea what was going on the whole time I was playing. Man, what a convoluted story, but I loved every second of it. And they're releasing new DLC this winter, and I'm very excited about it. Yeah. The other thing I'm excited about, Final Fantasy VIII. Yeah. I was more of a Final Fantasy VIII guy. That was my first Final Fantasy.
Well,
so
it's going to be your favorite.
When they announced that 7 and 9 were coming to the Switch as remasters, I was very excited. But I said, where's 8? And it's kind of a black sheep of the family.
I thought it was going to happen tonight.
I thought it was going to be a like available now thing, too.
Yeah,
I was bummed about that. And then was the big one, boys. It was Venge's. It was the Avengers.
Yeah.
This is the now we're
this is
now
why
I'm
we're recording
now I'm checking back in.
At night.
I'm checking back in. Yeah, I'm. This looked. I mean, look. It. I think it looks super fun. I think it looks like they're on the right path. It's. It look. I'm. based on the like based on the sort of like textures and rendering and like what we saw of the game, like how much and how little gameplay, it looks like it's going to be a pretty massive storyline.
Yeah.
But they're also like, it seems like they're giving you the opportunity to like, you're going to be able to play as the Big Six. Like, that's great. That's going to be so much fun.
Yeah, I'm interested to know how it's going to differ from kind of Ultimate Alliance. I think one of the key things that I've seen is that it's more cinematic, story-driven than those other games.
Definitely, definitely.
Because the Ultimate Alliance is like almost isymmetric, right? Like, it's just like...
Yep.
But yeah, there, and there is story
Ultimate
elements,
Alliance
3
comes out like in a month also. So
yeah.
That's something to tie us over.
Yeah, and it's not like as produced as this kind of game. I'm happy to get settled with like a new Avengers cast. Like, I would be happy if these are like, oh, these are my Avengers now for the next 5 years or whatever.
Mm-hmm. And they also said that they'll be doing free updates, and it seems like the world, like with The Division, the world will constantly be growing,
mm-hmm.
and you'll be getting new missions and like story content, which is awesome.
Yeah. My guess it's going to be like Division, but with the Avengers.
I think so, too. Because they set up to 4 players, shared world, co-op missions. It seems like they're kind of trying to get in on that Division Destiny kind of thing.
Yep.
Which I think this lends itself to great.
Ooh, baby. I'm excited. I'll play with you guys.
Do you want to play?
Yeah, of course. Get your pre-orders in now. Also, someone yelled during the press conference from the audience, "Where's Hawkeye?" And the guy just laughed and had nothing to say.
I heard that also.
Yeah.
Well, that was also a callback to the whole like Infinity War thing.
Yes.
Like, he wasn't, not only was he, obviously, Jeremy Renner didn't appear as Hawkeye in that film, but like they also like he was notably absent from the poster, so people like speculated he wouldn't be in it, and there was like a whole Where's Hawkeye movement. So that was fun. The Square Enix like crowd seemed like the right level of energized and tame. Like, I was like not off put by them, you know.
It seems like a Comic-Con crowd where it's like people who are genuinely excited to be there. Like, no one's trying to be there and hate on anything.
Yeah.
Right.
I need to say, though, as a note, a lot of the people on stage, a lot of these nice men and women are really nervous. Don't throw them off. If someone comes out and they have in their title the word senior or director of...
Or engineer.
Just let them get through their spiel.
Throw
They're really nervous. If Todd Howard's on stage, if Keanu Reeves is on stage, feel free to yell something nice out.
They're used to it.
But if someone's up there and they're struggling with the prompter, don't yell and interrupt them. They don't have anything to say to you.
What did you guys think of the, like, was there anything that jumped out to you? They had a video with the cast of the game. It's like a pretty much a who's who of like video game voice and performance capture artists.
Funny. They did assemble the Avengers of voice actors.
Yeah, and it was like a big reveal. I think, you know, that's good. I like that it's going to be a high quality production.
Yeah.
Overall, I liked the design. I don't know if I was like in love with the character models and designs yet. I really liked Hulk. I don't know, they went with like an interesting sort of military direction with Cap. But like
they went with kind of a Riker style Stark.
They did.
depressed Tony with like the long hair when they were talking. He looks just like my sixth grade teacher.
He looks like an extra from Clerks.
Depressed long. Also, did you notice that they really hit during the speech? They really hit on like, then 5 years later was like a big moment.
Oh yeah, that's funny.
Yeah, I was like, where have I heard that?
Did anyone think that the character model of Black Widow looked strangely? Her face looked strangely like Kobe Smulders.
It was very similar.
I didn't. I'll have to watch. I'm gonna have to watch again. My streaming, my internet was crapping out on me.
I prefer that they do this though than have it be like the movie characters animated, because you know, it's like create your own. It's like I loved what they did, what Insomniac did with Spider-Man.
I agree completely.
It was its own Spider-Man. It didn't look like Tom Holland. It was just like, you know, we've been doing this in comic books forever. There's different Spider-Man lines. They look different. There's different artists. It's like people accept it easily. It's not a big deal.
No, I agree completely, and I do like that they're doing that. I guess I'm then on the level of like, do I like this design?
Sure. Yeah.
I'm still figuring it out.
It's got me a little worried with some of the MCU, and then like now this new era of stuff is like the MCU's done so much good material. Like they've done maybe the ultimate form of a lot of stories. So I'm like, how much of this is going to be like they throw a little Civil War in there and like they come to, you know what I mean? Like how much are they going to borrow from the movies? Is it going to be like a, you know how sometimes like Netflix will make like a milquetoast version of a popular TV show? Is it going to be like that?
Well, Chris, thank God no one thought that like 10 years after Spider-Man's creation, where they thought we've told all the good stories.
There you go. There's perfect example.
I'm sure they've run out. I'm sure this was
10 years. But I mean, they've got 10 years of I've heard that about
of people cherry picking the best stuff.
I heard that the new X-Men movie had some issues from that they actually had to do reshoots because they saw the plot to Infinity War. And then they were like, yikes. Like, they couldn't do a certain storyline.
They were like, half of our cast quits in the middle.
Yeah.
That's a lot like the snap. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like that movie had other problems before Infinity War.
Yeah, the PR team was like, tell them it was too much like Infinity War. You know, we realized that we had made Infinity War, so we thought, like, we'll just make some changes, but it'll still kind of mostly be like Infinity War.
This movie's not for you. It's a little too much like the biggest movie ever made. You're probably not going to like this. Oops. It worked on me. You're probably not going to like this movie. It's like the greatest movie ever made. Never mind. Sorry.
That's amazing. Wow. Someone was working overtime on that one.
There you go. That's pretty good. I know what we'll do. We'll just say it's like a huge movie. We actually had to make it worse. Because it was too much like a great movie. We had to make this movie worse. That's genius. I'm going to start saying that about everything I do.
Well, once we saw the high water mark for the genre and we were like, well, shit, that's what we just did. We went back and, you know, we reshot half of it, but we still think it's pretty good. And you know what? We think it got even better. Oh, that made me cry, Chris. I'm laughing so hard.
There you go.
Oh, Chris, very good, very good. Well, that was RE3 coverage. Hey,
there it is.
I'm sure we're the only podcast in your feed doing E3 coverage today.
Yeah, this won't get lost.
But okay, so the secret word was cloud.
Yep.
Let us know your thoughts on E3. Thanks for joining us for the first edition of the Outpost, boys. I think this went well.
I love it.
This is a blast. We'll be back soon with something else random.
Yeah, and tune in Friday for our normal mainline episode and the Outpost we will be doing intermittently, and we'll be planning to release them on Tuesdays. So keep an eye out. And if we know we're going to do one ahead of time, we'll let you know. And then sometimes we'll just drop it, you know, if there's like hot news, you know? We'll
drop it like it's hot.
Say something happens on a Monday and we need to tell you about it. Well, until next time, we'll have a theme song next time, probably. Maybe this time. Let us know how it was. Anyway, for Sam and Chris, I'm Ryan. This was The Outpost.
For Ryan, I'm Sam.
What's our sign off?
Sam and Ryan. I'm Chris. We have to go through every possible combination.
For Chris and Sam, he's Ryan. All right.
For Ryan and Sam, I'm Ryan.
This is Greg Miller. Are you guys excited? Yeah.